All right, welcome back. This session, you're going to find out, not quite as long as the previous section anyway, because men are much more simple than women are, as far as, I'm not saying simplistic, just a little simpler, even in understanding or figuring out. But that's probably true, because I'm a male, so I know the way I think. Probably no less challenging for the women to understand as well. But so we think about the lesson last time was titled, "What Does She Want From Me Anyway?" And that's because that's the question we wrestle with. Women wrestle with a slightly different question. She thinks in terms of needs, but she thinks in terms of, what does he need now? Because men are described as being more needy than women. And women wrestle with that. Women will tell you that about husbands when the husband gets a cold or is sick or whatever else. He approaches that differently than she does. He appears to be more needy than she is. So that's why we titled this particular lesson this way. But what we are going to find out in this lesson, as whereas women have this love as a basic need, the way God built them. I mean, why does God say, husbands, love your wives? It's because love is what they need. That's what he's creating. God is trying to fulfill a need. He doesn't say, wives, love your husbands as the primary directive. That's not what he's going to, because it isn't they don't want to be loved. That's not the primary need. So he says, husbands, love your wives, because he created them to have the prevalent need of love. He created men differently than that. And what we're going to find out is that the way men are created, women are going to discover that men are driven to achieve simplicity in life. It doesn't mean they're simple-minded. They may be, but doesn't mean that God made them simple-minded. It means that they're looking for simplicity in life. It shows itself in a lot of different ways. It shows itself in the nature of how we communicate with one another, the things that we do. Men don't communicate generally like women communicate. Men communicate to solve. We have a message coming from the wife that says we need to talk. Men here, Houston, we have a problem. We because we're thinking, why do you have conversation if it isn't to arrive at a solution to something? Like we joked last time when the man told his wife, "You're welcome. I don't just call you for no reason." You ever seen a group of guys sitting around and one of them just says, "Hey, what you thinking?" I don't want to know what he's thinking. We may talk about problems or issues, or we think we can solve the world's problems even, but I'm not giving any man a penny for his thoughts. We don't converse that way, whereas women do. There's a book that was written by Bill and Pam Farrells called "Men Are Like Waffles, Women Are Like Spaghetti." That seems like, I almost didn't read the book. I thought, you know, I've read enough of the analogy books. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. One of my favorites, though, was men are like clams, women are like crowbars. I thought that's a good description of trying to get something out of the man. But this one was men are like waffles, women are like spaghetti. And he wrote that book because of social scientists talk about the way men process. And women need to understand that men process things in boxes. Like you're looking down at a waffle, it's a whole series of little squares. And if he's in one box, he wants to stay in that one box. And so for her to understand that that's the way he processes is helpful in these areas that we'll look at. So even in conversation, if you're talking about money and the finances, that's the box he wants to stay in. And so for a woman, she may be like that plate of spaghetti, he says. In other words, he says, pick a noodle with your eyes. Pick a noodle, he says, and follow it to the other end of that noodle with your eye. He says, you will seamlessly switch from noodle to noodle without ever realizing that you've changed noodles, because the whole plate is woven together. And she processes things that way, men, and we don't. And she needs to understand that. She's processing. Every thought is connected to every other thought. And so it's what allows conversations. Judy and I have had conversations before where, other than the typical good morning and stuff that you get started, but then at some point, very early in the day, she'll say something like, you remember when they, and then she'll give a description of something. My response is always the same. I say, you cannot start a conversation with a pronoun. I don't even know who they are. And she says, well, you remember, she says, yesterday we were talking about, and I'm thinking, You got to connect me. I wasn't back in yesterday. You know, she's got it all connected. Everything processes the same. And I love the description the one guy gave. He says, a woman comes home from work, or let's just talk about a man first. Man comes home from work, his wife says, how was work today? There's only one proper answer to that, isn't there, men? What is it? Good or fine, that's it. That was a good conversation we had with the wife. She asked, I expressed. The wife was working outside the home. She came home and her husband said, how was work today? She said, work was great. She said, you remember that suggestion I made about what they could do with that room they had built as far as the storage and how to best get the use out of it with storage? She says, my boss really liked that idea and accepted that idea. And I thought, that is so good that he's willing to accept the recommendations of the women equally with the men because he treats women fairly just like he treats the men. And that made me think of you and how much you care about us, both me and our daughters. And by the way, Brittany's got a soccer game on Thursday. And don't forget that we've asked Brittany's good friend to come over with her parents. And the guy, men understand, the guy's thinking, are you kidding? I asked how was work, and we're talking about Brittany's best friend's parents coming over for dinner on Thursday. It was all connected. She connects everything. Women need to understand, men don't process that way. So if you're looking to get your needs fulfilled, then you can express that, and men need to, I tell men, get on the train. You're scared, I know, because we don't know where it's going and where if it's ever going to stop. But you have to get on and go on the journey because she needs the connection. You have to let her connect. But you need to let men understand, and you need to understand about men, that they're in these boxes. And sometimes he needs to stay in the box. That's what he needs for functionality in life because we are built to solve. God made us to solve, to be able to provide and protect. And so we seek that way. And there's a box, women, I know you don't believe this or understand this. There's a box that has nothing in it. And sometimes he goes there. And so you say, what are you thinking? He says, nothing. He's not lying. That's the way he processes and gets downtime. Men have an ability to go into the nothing box and just veg out. But it is important for women to understand because social scientists call that compartmentalizing. Women don't typically compartmentalize, men do. They compartmentalize, and so they solve things in issues that way. And so God's going to give some instruction to the woman as well. In Ephesians chapter 5, he's not going to say, love your husbands. Not that he doesn't want you to love your husbands, but it's not their greatest or most prevailing need. So he's going to use two other words to help us understand the nature of what it is that the godly wife is supposed to do. He says, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church and his body, the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands. And then when you get down to the end of the chapter, when he gets to that nevertheless statement, that however statement that we talked about last night, when he says, look, I'm talking about Christ and the church, but don't miss the point, he says, you still need to act a certain way. He said, however, let each of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. Doesn't mention love in this passage. He deals with two other aspects of their relationship. In 1 Peter 3, he does the same thing as well when he's talking about her submitting to her husband. So he's going to use these two words. He's going to say, wives, submit to your husbands. You want to fulfill his need, we need to have women who are biblically submissive. And I make sure to say biblically because our culture has a very skewed view of what the word even means. But we need to understand that it is critical for both to fulfill their role if we're going to function the way God wants us to function and bring glory to him. And so he says, wives, submit to your husbands. Secondly, he says, wives, respect your husbands. And so what you're going to find out is where a woman's most prevailing need is love, and the man needs to understand, how do I fulfill that? How do I supply that? Women are going to find out the most prevailing need for a man, the way that God has created him, is respect. And so how do I seek to fulfill the respect? Three things that we're going to look at, three areas that would help us understand, how do we make sure that he is going to get the respect that he is due? Now, it's interesting. So let's talk about those words for a second, submit. The Greek word, the English word, they all really mean the same thing. And so as you think about the word here, submit, it actually is a word that denotes rank. that talks about the idea of yielding one. It means literally to line up under. It has nothing to do with equality. God says in Galatians chapter 3, there is neither male nor female in Christ. Our standing before God is exactly the same whether we're male or female. That's not the issue at all. It isn't an equality issue before God. It is a rank or role relationship issue. We understand that. How many in here were in the military? Anybody serve in the military? And you attained what rank? General? Oh, no, not general. But somebody was a general, weren't they, when you were in? You know, you weren't general either, were you? Before I say anything bad about generals, I want to make sure. No. But we understand there were enlisted men. Were you enlisted or were you an officer? I'm sorry, what? Officer? Enlisted. All right. And so probably in either role, you still had people that had rank over you, didn't you? As an enlisted man or as an officer. And we understand that. It doesn't mean that the officer here is inferior. If you were, say, a captain, you're not inferior to the major, but you have a different role. Somebody is in a different position, and we understand that. And for the military to function properly, everybody needs to understand that, don't they? Even if you're not in the military, you have somebody at work that has a different position than you, has a rank over you. Doesn't mean they're superior to you, does it? No, it's not an issue of superiority. It's an issue of role relationship. And for functionality to work, it has to be that way. God established his church that way. He gives us different roles. He says role fulfillment is necessary. So that's the way it is with this idea. It's to yield. You cannot submit your wife. You can't. You might be able to subject her, but that's not a biblical concept either. You know, I could make my children do certain things. I could make them. When they were 3 years old, I'm saying just physical size alone would allow me to keep the upper hand in a physical way. If they didn't want to sit down, I could hold them down. I'm saying that's not what you're wanting out of your child. You want them to learn. When they would get in a fight, most incredible thing. I mean, three boys got in a fight, and there was never once, apparently, that it was not justified. So if they hit their brother, they always had a reason for it. But we used to do like a lot of parents. It's like, you know what? You apologize to your brother, and you sit on the couch together. And if they were really aggravated, we might make them put their arms around each other. You know, sit on the couch, put your arm around your brother. They never yielded their spirit in that. The boys didn't go, you know, I just waited for one time when you'd catch a brother hitting another one and say, look, you cannot hit your brother that way. And the brother say, you know what? You're right. I am profoundly sorry. I should never have treated my brother that way. We had to force them to say, I'm sorry. And then they didn't mean it. You knew that. But you still had to try and teach them to say it. That's not submission. They didn't yield anything. He's not talking about subjecting. He's saying this is up to the wife. It's your choice whether you yield your spirit. The same as it's my choice whether I yield my spirit to God. He says we have to yield. That's the nature of submission. One person yielding to another person. It has to be that voluntary attitude of giving in. Has to be. That's the nature of submission. On the other hand, respect is a little different than that. Respect is the idea that in regards to how we treat the other person, to give particular attention to, special regard, deference to somebody. It is the nature of just acknowledging. And in Ephesians chapter 5, he says, why is it that she is to submit and respect her husband? What's the reason for that? Now, the manner, he says, the manner is as the church does to Christ, right? Just like Christ loved the church, that's how the husband I'm supposed to love my wife. And the wife is to submit and respect as the church does to Christ. He says, that's the manner. What's the reasoning? What's the motive behind it? What does he say? Why does he tell her to submit? Just go back and read verse 25 and 26, I mean 22 and 23 there. What's the reason? He says, submit to your husbands. Why? Because he is the head. Well, that's not always something that is easy to swallow, is it? You know, thinking in terms of respecting somebody. My dad was an officer in the military, and we got some benefits out of that when we would go on base. Back in the day, before the 9/11 incident, especially. You could go onto a military base if you had a sticker on your car. A lot of guys are familiar, certainly the other generation's not familiar with that. You just drive up to the gate, and they would look at the sticker, and they'd wave you onto the base. Well, mine, the car I was driving, I was a 16-year-old kid driving, and it had a sticker on it that not only said that I was allowed on base, it said the car belonged to an officer. So the airman who was at the gate would snap to attention and salute me every time I went through the gate. I deserved that respect, I thought. No, I didn't. I mean, I would snap a salute back to him. He probably wanted to unholster his weapon, but he wasn't allowed to do that. Why? Because the car said it was an officer's car. That's important to understand about the nature of respect, because we think in terms of, if you think about a husband's love for his wife, we use those words where we talk about sacrificial and caring and nourishing. We think about never-ending kind of love. If you were going to use one word to describe the love that Christ has for his church, what one word would you use? Total? Oh, I'm sorry.
Steadfast.
Steadfast, thank you. Steadfast, total?
Sacrificial?
How about one that's kind of all-encompassing when you think of the love that Christ had for his church and we think in terms of unconditional? When we talk about he loved us even when we don't do right, he loved us for all time, he never gives up on us, his love is unconditional. And yet, if I were to say respect must be, how do we fill that blank in?
Earned.
That's kind of an interesting concept, isn't it? Respect must be earned. You realize if that's what's going on in Ephesians chapter 5, we have now made the husband responsible for both sides of the equation. God does not do that. God says that you are to respect him because he is the husband. He says it isn't an issue of did he earn respect. He is due respect because of the role that he is in. God is not telling a wife you need to respect everything he says or does any more than he's telling the husband you need to love everything she says and does. He's not asking me to approve of every behavior. He's saying I'm to love my wife because she's my wife, period. One of the things I do with couples when I do premarital counseling, we go through Ephesians 5. One of the classes I send them home, I say, I need you to go back. I need you to read Ephesians 5, verses 22 through 32. I said, and when you come back, I want you to list all the if-then clauses in there. Do you remember those in schools? In school? If this, then this. You know, logical conclusion. Sometimes they come back and they got the message. Sometimes they're just confused. I couldn't find any. I really tried. I promise you I tried. I couldn't find any. There aren't any. Never once did he say, Mark, you're to love your wife if. He said, no, you're to love your wife because you're a child of God and you're a husband and she's your wife, period. What if she doesn't act good, God? God says, I don't care. Your job is your job. He'll deal with her and her job. Isn't that the way it's supposed to work? As a Christian, isn't that exactly what he tells us? Yeah, God, you know what? I'd treat these people better, but they are miserable people. God says, I don't care. You need to demonstrate Christianity and the love of Christ to everybody, regardless how they act. Well, wives need to understand the nature of this respect is to be unconditional. The same as love is unconditional, respect is unconditional because of the role. I've been voting long enough to have voted in multiple elections and for president. And I would just tell you that there are presidents that I have liked very much, presidents I have disliked very much. I'm just saying policy-wise and everything else. But I would tell you this. I honestly feel that not only would I, but I should. If the president of the United States, whether it was one I liked or did not like, walked into a room where I was and I was sitting down, I would stand up. It isn't an issue of do I agree with him. It's an issue of, if he's president of the United States, then I will give the office the respect. Now, we've lost that as a nation in general. I'm not talking about this president. I'm saying across the board. Authority is not respected unless we agree with the authority. Submission and respect have nothing to do with agreement. My kids always did what I asked them to do if they agreed that it was the right thing to do. But I asked them to submit when they didn't think it was the right thing to do. I asked them to respect me even if they didn't agree with the decision because I was their father. That's what he's saying to the wives as well. She needs to have unconditional respect toward her husband. So, just relatively quickly, three areas of life that he needs that, and he wants to see that. One, as we think about the respect that he needs, is life with you going to be filled with an expression of confidence? How do you express your confidence? Whereas the husband needs to tell the wife how much he loves her, how much she means to him, what her incredible value is, she needs to express confidence in him. What kind of areas do men look for expressions of confidence in, do you think? Providing for the family. How important is that? Providing for the family. I was doing some studies with a young couple that were having a lot of struggles. And in the conversation, she made a statement and said, "You need to get a second job," she told her husband. Now, financially, honestly, she may have been right. They needed to find something different they could do. Either needed to get a different job, second job. She thought she was offering a comment that was beneficial and helpful. How do you think he received that comment? What did he hear and feel in that? You're not good enough. You're not providing for our family. That isn't what she meant specifically, at least as far as I know. But that's the communication that's coming in, that sounds to a husband. I've said things to my wife before that I had no idea that she might find unloving. Because to me, it didn't sound like it was an unloving thing to say or an unloving way to say it. But her perception was that that's what had happened. And it's important that I recognize that when I say something that she perceives as unloving, I always tell couples I'm studying with, perception is reality. Just keep that in mind. Perception is reality. If I say something and my wife thinks that it was cruel, it doesn't matter if I think it was cruel. It makes no difference. She thought it was cruel. I need to apologize that I hurt her feelings. Same way. I need to make sure, if you're a wife, you need to make sure that you're respecting the husband, things that you say, the things that he provides for, the way he takes care of the company, his desire to achieve, praising him for the work that he does. I appreciate how much you work for this family, how hard you work for this family, the things that you do to get ahead in life. I'm thankful for that, and you praise him for that. He's not as interested in coming out to get ready to go somewhere and for you to say to him, I'm not saying he doesn't want it at all, but he's not looking for you to say, wow, you look fantastic today. And he likes that occasionally, you know, but if you don't tell him, he'll tell himself, so he's okay with that. But he does want to know that you appreciate who he is. That's where respect is. His desire to achieve, his desire to provide for the family, as we said, that you're expressing that. You know how hard he works. Interesting, one guy lost his job, came home, and he said, she said, how was work today? He said, actually, work was not good. They had layoffs today. I got laid off today. Her response was, that's okay. We have each other. Now, that sounds like a very loving thing to say. I care about you. Doesn't really matter. What do you think he heard? I lost my job. That's okay. His response was, no, it's not okay. How am I going to provide for my family? She was trying to be loving, but that isn't what he needed. And so picking up on that and understanding how to express that desire, that you show him that, his desire to lead. I appreciate you taking the leadership, and men, you need to take the leadership in the home. You need to be the husband, you need to be the father, you need to be the spiritual leader that's in a house. Men need that. But I would tell you that We have a class at one of our marriage retreats that deals with both sides of the problem, which are equal. Men who won't lead, women who won't follow. Both are equal problems. No question about that. You need to show him that you appreciate his leadership and that he steps up and what he does for the children spiritually and otherwise, what he does for you otherwise. Appreciate his desire to analyze and counsel. If we don't ever get to solve anything, we are a basket case. We just are, because we don't understand why are we communicating only to connect. I need to solve. Not always. When we had three toddlers at home, that was back in the days when they were my boys, when I'd come home. We had three toddlers at home, 3 and a half to zero, just, you know, a birth at one time. So there's this tiny spread in this age. And I would come home. And Judy would have had one of those days where any mother understands. Fathers maybe not get that picture, but she understood what the last 10 hours had been like with the three kids and how hectic it was. And she'd say, you know what your sons did today? Or your son did today? And then she would tell me what he did. And what do you think I did? I said, you know what? Here's what you should have done. Here's what you should have said. She didn't care what I thought she should have done. She wasn't communicating for solution. She had already eventually taken care of the problem. She was wanting to connect. There's a video that's out there on YouTube. You may have seen it. I'll probably get in trouble for recommending this video, but it's called It's Not About the Nail. Anybody in here ever seen that video? If you haven't, look it up. It's going to show you, and I understand it's oversimplistic, and it may be a little aggravating to women to see it, but it shows you the difference in the way we communicate, because we're communicating to solve. So sometimes you need to let him solve the problem. Present something to him, not only to connect, let him know you need his help. You need his solution. He feels respected if he is allowed to analyze, if he is allowed to confidence. So how can he know that you do those things? How many women in here ever give their men cards for like birthday, anniversary, whatever occasion? How do you sign it? Somebody tell me how you sign the card. As long as it's allowable to tell us. How do you sign the card? Somebody tell me.
I love you, love.
I've seen cards, you know, with all my love. You ever thought about giving your husband a card and say, with my utmost respect? So why would you not give a card and sign a card with my utmost respect to your husband? Tell me why you wouldn't do that. What's that?
Don't necessarily tell him, show him.
Well, so, yeah, absolutely. You need to show him the respect. Yeah, it seems impersonal, doesn't it? It seems a little cold. I'd rather demonstrate that than say it. And I'm not telling you to start signing your cards with all my respect, but I would tell you that that's what he's looking for more than the love. So if I'm not going to sign my cards that way, how can I look for ways to do that? So you express faith in him and his job. You praise his commitment, as we said, to provide and protect for the family. You tell him you just need his ear. Women, if you don't want him to solve, diffuse that on the front end. Tell him, I'm not looking for a solution. I just need to bend your ear for a minute. Because then he can relax. He's not looking for solution the whole time you're talking. But sometimes let him go ahead and solve that. And applaud his decisions. Tell him you really appreciate the decision that he made. And be gracious when he makes the decisions that aren't the best. Help him to understand that. Make sure you do that. Secondly, well, let me add one more thing before there. 1 Peter chapter 3. I want you to turn there for just a second. Because there's an interesting statement made in 1 Peter 3. He's talked about women who are married to unbelievers, but it's kind of interesting what he says. Here's the difference in the way we communicate. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 1 says, likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won. How? Without a word. You think that's just coincidental that that's the way that's phrased there and that's what he says? I don't think so. Men don't communicate and aren't motivated by lots of words. That's just not the way we're normally motivated. Few words. What do you think one of the most common comments of men when they feel that there's issues in the marriage? Women nag, men will say. You almost never hear a man say, my wife nags. But women will say, a wife say, my husband nags me. But men will say that. She doesn't think she's nagging. She may say, would you take out the garbage? And I say, I will. And an hour later, she says, I asked you to take out the garbage. It's still sitting here. Are you going to take it out? And I say, I said I would. I will. If she says it four more times, it's not going to encourage me greatly to take out the garbage. If she wants me to take it out then, she should say, we've got some people coming over, or whatever the reason is, or it's stinking in the kitchen. Would you mind taking care of this now? Then I can decide whether I want to follow the instruction or not. But I at least have the instruction clearly. Understand, men don't communicate the same way, and they don't. Men are not helped by questions. We'll be driving, and I get a question like, is this the lane you want to be in?
Why would I drive?
Yes, that's always my response. I'm in it, aren't I? It's obviously the one I want to be in because I'm in it. If you want me to be in the other lane, or if I need to be in the other lane, at least tell me. I need more clear communication than that. She says, are these your socks on the floor? We're the only two living there. I think, if they're not my socks, we have a lot more than dirty laundry to talk about, that's for sure. Just if you want me to pick up the socks, just tell me. Men communicate differently, and women need to understand that. Be direct. That's why we're direct with one another. I'm not saying we'll always follow the instruction. We don't. Sometimes we're selfish, and we may not do. But it's important that you understand men are listening differently, and they're communicating differently, and they need to have clear instruction. So not questions. Direct statements are helpful as opposed to the questions. And make sure that you're showing that. Secondly, are we going to be... Oops, I'm sorry. I forgot I had that slide up there. And that's a great point. Think about that. That she thinks about how much she appreciates all he does, all the work that he does, and how hard he puts forth all his effort and how he takes care of the family, and she just doesn't say anything. That'd be no different than the man thinking about how beautiful his wife is and how much he loves her and how much he cares about her and what a great mother she is. And he never says anything. You have to express that. How's he going to know? And so we're going to skip over this because I just went through those. Think in set terms of, and I can go back and give you that slide if you want later, but it just says the things that I said. Is life with you going to be filled with admiration? Are you going to admire him? Because men like to be admired. When a man's at work, his boss can come through at some point. He's been working on a project or whatever. You know what? If a boss just comes and puts his arm on his shoulder, on the man's shoulder, and says, "Man, what a great job you did on that project. Really appreciate that." You think he doesn't go out holding his head high? I mean, he may want a raise, but just the fact that he was told that helps him to understand. We're trying to accomplish, we're trying to solve, we're trying to get this taken care of. We want somebody, just like a woman is looking for compliments as far as who she is, how she looks, the way she acts, so does a man. But normally it's about his desired work, the things that he's going to do it. In Proverbs, he says things, these words matter, you know, pleasant words. Says are a honeycomb, harsh words like a sword, or the tongue has the power over life and death. Think about that, what just a couple of words can do. If you're in a doctor's office, a doctor comes out and says, "We got the biopsy back, the mass we took out is cancerous, it's malignant." So think about emotionally what that does to a person, versus the doctor coming out and say, "We got the biopsy back. We got the lab report. What we took out was benign. Nothing else is needed." I mean, isn't it incredible? Two totally different emotional states by just a few words spoken. Imagine being in a courtroom. How much difference would you feel when the judge comes in and says, "The verdict is not guilty versus guilty"? I mean, it doesn't take many words to really change a person's spirit. Men want that admiration. And if you didn't believe that, you didn't think that was true, think about one expression that men use that women probably never, but certainly would rarely use. "You're the man." You know, I'm telling you, a group of guys can be together, one can hit the other one on the shoulder and say, "You're the man." You go, "No, you're the man. You're the man." Whoever comes out of the room, having been declared the man by his peers, holds his head high when he walks through life. Because we seek that respect, whether it's from our peers or whether it's from our employer, whether it's from our wife or whether it's from our children. Men are driven to seek that kind of respect, and admiration helps that. Demeaning words, don't do that. Anytime I talk badly about him, comparing him to someone else, you know, both sides do that. Those kind of words are never helpful. Judy can tell you, there were times when I said, she'd be fixing something, I'd say, "You know how my mom used to cook this?" Like, you know, lessons you learn early in marriage. Because comparisons don't help anybody that way. Those are demeaning. Don't do that to him. Undermining words. I was counseling with a couple. They had a child that was wanting to go somewhere. The father absolutely did not want him to go. The mother didn't really have a problem with him going. They talked about it. She went out. They talked about it privately. They went out in the room. The mother's response to the child was, "I really didn't care if you go, but your father says no." How respectful is that? That can't work. That can't work. She needs to go out and say, "Your father and I are in agreement that you should not go," because she is both respectful and submissive and lets him take the lead when there's a decision that has to be made. She has to demonstrate both to him. She needs to make sure she does that. And then finally, the side of the equation that for men is different than it is with women, is life with you going to be physically intimate? Men, as a general rule, when there are significant issues in marriage, men and women come into the sessions, if we're talking to couples that are really struggling, me or the elders, or me and the elders, or whoever, but as they come in to a room, women, as I mentioned on the earlier session, will most frequently complain that they feel their husband is completely emotionally non-supportive. And so they're not getting the support. He's not talking to her. He's not spending time with her. He's not, whatever the case is, where she feels emotionally drained and unsupported. Men will rarely deal with that side of the equation. Men will come into that frequently and say, our physical intimacy in life is not what it should be. Women rarely come into it that way. I'm saying both need both. I understand that. But men need that, and we don't think of that in terms of a sign of respect. But it's interesting some of the things that men have written, and I'm going to put up a couple quotes in a second because it's interesting how they view that. Is life with you going to be intimate? And so you think in terms of the idea of 1 Corinthians 7, because he says in 1 Corinthians 7, do not withhold. He says, because your body is not yours, it's hers, to the men. And tells her, your body is not yours, it's his, to the women. And do not deprive one another, he says, except for a season. And even for that season, do you remember what he says? That season has a specific rule. You're going to take this equation out of marriage. You're going to take the sexual side out of marriage. He says what? For a season that is devoted to prayer. He said, if you're withdrawing the physical side of marriage from one another or either from the other, he says it needs to be for the purpose of spiritual growth, for prayer and for fasting. And so you're spending time in something else. But he says, you can't do that. It is his need. It is your privilege. It is a wife's understanding, should be a wife's understanding, that fulfilling my husband in the physical side is the way he recharges. It is that much a part of the marriage. God, in fact, gave us that. It is not fair or correct to think men are just dogs because they're driven by physical need. The drive sexually that has been put in man has been put in there by God. I told you I gave that lesson at Florida a few years back. Why did God even make us sexual beings, and why did he make us feel the way we do about it? Because men and women don't approach it exactly the same. Do they? This could be a nod of the head if you're comfortable doing that. It's like, whatever way. Interesting, because why did God create the woman even to look like she looks? We said he made him physically different. And so God says to the male what? He says, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Now he's talking about maintaining pure and in the relationship, but why would he use that as an example? He says, like this loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times, because he says, I have made her to be physically appealing to you, to create that drive. It is a method of him recharging, of him expending his energy. And so where she needs the emotional support, and even in the physical relationship, women like to cuddle more than men like to cuddle. Why? Because she wants to connect, and he needs the physical intimacy side of that. They both are necessary. Both are needed, but we need not to be afraid as Christians to talk about God made us sexual beings. He did not have to do that. Man didn't make it pleasurable. God made it pleasurable with the intent of drawing us into a permanent, loving relationship. That's what it is the microcosm of the marriage that most signifies absolute, total unity between two people. And God created it that way. And so he's saying, women, you need to understand, it isn't just that he's a purely physical being and doesn't have the emotions to go with that, but he needs that side of it. I would ask you this. You read a statement like, David was up on a roof and he saw a woman bathing. Every male understands the concept of that statement. Whether you want to fault David for being on the roof, you know, the time when they were, should have been at war and maybe he should have been with them, I don't think David went up on the roof in order to find somebody to lust after. But he gazed upon her. That was a problem, no question about that. He gazed upon her. He continued to pursue that. But I'm telling you, every male understands. If you just say David was up on the roof and he saw a woman who was naked, God created that to be a stimulus. That's why men need to avoid it. He says, that's why you have a wife. He says, you avoid that. But we understand the nature of that. And so it's critical to a man feeling desired. And so these are some things that some women said. Said, I wish that my wife understood that making a priority of meeting my intimacy needs is the loudest and clearest ways she can say to me, you're more important to me than anything else in the world. So where a woman, if a husband never told his wife he loved her, how valued would she feel? Not very. And so when he feels that the intimate side of marriage is not what it's supposed to be, it's the same way. He doesn't feel valuable to her. He went on to say it's a form of communication that speaks more forcefully and with less room for misinterpretation than any other. He wants to be desired. It isn't that God's saying, it's your job to fulfill your conjugal rights and, you know, like, you're just submitting your body to him. He wants to be emotionally involved in that as well. And men express that by saying, she doesn't understand how even her occasional dismissals make me feel less desirable. I can't resist her. I wish that I too were irresistible. She says that I am, but her ability to say no so easily makes it hard to believe. I like that statement. That is just a guy saying, look, this is just the way that it works. Somebody says, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, you mean the world to me, but then if he feels rejection in some phase of the relationship, he says, I don't know how I'm supposed to believe that. Any more than if I told my wife, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, and she's telling me what she needs, and I don't do any of it, why should she believe me? Because it needs to be in deed and in truth. So men are simpler, but they're still looking for the same thing. Women who will demonstrate respect to them, who will follow their lead and show the respect that God says they should do. Unconditional love toward the wife, unconditional respect toward the husband. Both are absolutely critical to the marriage being what it's supposed to be. Hopefully that gives you some food for thought. And if you have issues with any of that, more than happy to discuss any of that further. It's just that typically, and as a matter of fact, when I gave that talk at Florida College, it's just not a subject we like to broach amongst collective brethren, but it's a subject we need to. We need to understand it's God created, and God put it as a part of the marriage. Now, I would tell you that when I did that at Florida College, on row two was my wife sitting beside her father, sitting beside the wife of one of the elders from the congregation and their daughter. So I'd just as soon have presented it in different circumstances than talking about the sexual side of marriage with my father-in-law sitting about 20 feet away. But it's critical to marriage. It's a microcosm, and God designed it. I think it's important for us to realize the emotional and physical side of marriage, God made them both. God intends that they both be fulfilled in order that both people can be fulfilled. Appreciate so much your attention. And I'm happy at any point, either in the classes or after, to field any questions that you ever have. So, all right. Barry?